regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you on the program today. Hope you had a good weekend. We're going to be talking with NRA ILA Executive Director John Comerford here in just a minute or two about a situation in New Jersey where Jennifer Davenport, the new Attorney General, has issued subpoenas to a number of FFLs in the state. Her office has not every FFL, just a subset, quote unquote, but we don't know how many. Sure seems like a lot of gun stores have received this subpoena, seeking all kinds of records about sales of Glock handguns over the past decade. Some of this information would appear to be very invasive in terms of, you know, the identities of gun owners in New Jersey. And what's interesting here is that, according to NRA ILA, the information that the Attorney General is requesting is available to her. She's already got access to this through the database that the New Jersey State Police has. You know, New Jersey has essentially de facto gun registration. But rather than go to the New Jersey State Police and request this information, she's requesting this information from FFLs. This is part of the discovery process in the Attorney General's lawsuit against Glock. This litigation originally filed by now former Attorney General Matthew Platkin. And the implication here is that by using the discovery process and the subpoena process to get access to this information would then be publicly available. Whereas if the Attorney General got this information from the state police, it would not be an open record. It would not be information that would be released or available to the public. But by going the subpoena route, yes, all of this information, including perhaps, again, the personal information of anybody who bought a Glock in New Jersey over the past decade, would be out there. As you can imagine, that is rather disturbing. So, again, we're going to talk with NRA ILA Executive Director John Comerford about that momentarily. Do want to let you know, at the Supreme Court today, nothing on the hardware cases, the challenges to California's magazine ban, Washington State's magazine ban, the Cook County ban on so-called assault weapons, Connecticut's ban on so-called assault weapons. The Supreme Court did not grant cert to any of those cases. They did not deny any of those cases. They will once again be relisted. But once again, we see this holding pattern for, you know, some critically important cases. And disappointingly, the Supreme Court denied the cert petition from Patrick Tate Adamiak. This was not a surprise. You know, we've been talking about this at Bearing Arms and here on the podcast. No justice had requested the DOJ reply to this cert petition, and that's generally not a good sign. When the government says, yeah, you know, we're not really even going to bother replying, and no justice says, well, we want to hear from you anyway, that tends to demonstrate a lack of interest on the part of the justices, and that would, again, appear to be the case today with this denial of cert. No written dissent from any of the conservative justices. So what comes next for Patrick Tate Adamiak is a rehearing, I guess a hearing coming up in July on his sentencing. So he was sentenced to 20 years in federal prison. There is a request for a rehearing on that. We did hear from ATF Director Robert Sicotta last week during a House Oversight Committee hearing. He was asked by, I think it was Representative Eli Crane, about the Adamiak case. He said that he is aware of it, that the DOJ is actually working to some degree on the Adamiak case, and it sounded like the DOJ was working not necessarily to keep that 20-year sentence imposed, but honestly, I would say right now the best opportunity for relief for Patrick Tate Adamiak lies with a presidential pardon, and it could be that maybe the DOJ is looking at recommending a pardon for Patrick Tate Adamiak. Again, we have no knowledge of that. We are supposed to be talking with ATF Director Robert Sicotta on Wednesday this week. This will be a topic of conversation. But for now, anyway, Patrick Tate Adamiak's case denied by the Supreme Court. All right, let's get to our conversation with the head of NRA ILA about what's going on here in New Jersey and what options FFLs have if they do not want to comply with the Attorney General's subpoena. Take a look and a listen. John, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Great to be here.
All right, so let's talk about what's going on in New Jersey here. I mean, we talk a lot about what's going on around the country in Virginia and in Minnesota, but for today, we'll focus on what's going on in New Jersey. So Matt Plackin is no longer the Attorney General. You've got Jennifer Davenport named by the Governor Sherrill there. She's continuing her predecessor's lawsuit against Glock, and we've seen, you know, similar lawsuits filed in Baltimore and the state of Illinois, Chicago. What's interesting about what she's doing is she's issued subpoenas to, let's say, a lot of FFLs in the state. Her office says it's not every FFL. It's a subset of FFLs, but it sure sounds like it's a pretty big subset. And what exactly is she asking these FFLs to turn over, John?
Look, I mean, first off, it's still this continued taxpayer-funded harassment of gun owners and gun dealers in the state of New Jersey. You know, I was talking with someone here in the office this morning, and we said, well, the left goes no Kings protests, but yet here's an AG who's appointed by a governor who's not held accountable to the voters and continuing the same level of harassment. So we do see a selection of gun dealers that have been subpoenaed to provide their records for purchasers of Glock firearms in the state of New Jersey. Now, that can be used to create a registry that can be used to, I guess, go get those handguns if they wanted to through confiscation. But let's keep in mind in New Jersey, I mean, it's already exceptionally egregious to even be able to buy a pistol. You have to first have a firearms identification card for your possession permit, essentially. Then right. You have to get a pistol permit to purchase it. You have to maintain basically certificates of eligibility for that firearm in the state, or have paperwork to show you had a firearm from another state before certain laws went into effect. I mean, it's a mess. It's every level of bureaucratic harassment against the core civil right imaginable. And this just continues that. And I think the real goal here is not just the harassment of the dealers and potentially the customers, but it's a mental block against wanting to buy a firearm, right? They want to discourage you from buying a firearm. Their goal is to see coverage of this and hope it leads to an individual not wanting to buy a gun because they're worried about being on this list. I mean, I think it is a bit more nefarious than we initially thought, but they have unlimited taxpayer funds and they're weaponizing them.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, so what's interesting here is, I mean, the lawsuit, as I mentioned, very similar to the lawsuits we've seen filed in other anti-gun jurisdictions, basically accusing Glock of, you know, aiding and abetting criminals because some people are illegally converting semi-automatic handguns into a fully automatic handguns through the use of a switch, which is illegal under federal law and most state laws as well. As far as I know, there's no allegation from the Attorney General that any of the purchases that they're trying to get more information about were individuals who illegally converted these firearms, right? Mm-hmm. But from what I understand, too, the AG has access to the information that she's requesting from these FFLs because of New Jersey's gun control regime. Mm-hmm. This information is already in a New Jersey State Police database. But rather than make that request to the state police, she's going through the subpoena process. And it's my understanding that's because as part of the discovery, this information could be made public at some point, right?
Everything they can do to discourage you from buying a gun. And then this is how sick it is. She could aggregate this information, just as you pointed out, through various channels and the requirements that it takes just to purchase those firearms. But instead, they're going to make gun dealers incur legal fees. They're going to have this threat potentially of this information becoming public. And then the purchaser has to worry about their information being out there, that they're a known purchaser of these items. It really is layer after layer of state yielded harassment against a core civil right, and whether that's through lawful commerce of the individual purchaser or the seller. And you know, you nailed it on the head. I mean, these are if you take a firearm and you illegally convert it into a machine gun and you use it in the commission of a crime, under federal law, that is the second strictest mandatory minimum penalty right behind terrorism. So let's see a few prosecutions go up on the board and see people going to jail for very long terms. I think you'll see this fix itself pretty quick in terms of criminals misusing these items. Remember, Glock didn't make these firearms for them to be misused. Glock made them for law-abiding Americans, law enforcement, and others to use them in a self-defense situation, competition, or the fact that you just want to own one because it's your legal right to do so. Mm-hmm. But yet, here's the state coming after them for the criminal misuse of their product. This is a lawful product. It's lawfully possessed by, it's one of the most common consumer products in general nationwide. There is no other consumer product that's treated the same, let alone one that's constitutionally protected. I don't see the AG going after Ford or Chevy because their vehicles were misused or were used in a bank robbery or misused by a drunk driver. You don't see that. It's because they don't like our way of life and the way we choose to exercise this core civil right through the Second Amendment.
Yeah. And I don't think it stops here. You know, I mean, we've seen litigation filed by like Brady, for instance, they have argued that semi-automatic rifles should be treated like they're machine guns because they can be, you know, readily converted again through the illegal use of an auto sear. So if they're successful in, you know, this legal challenge that, you know, Glock makes a product that's semi-automatic, but because people can illegally convert it, Glock somehow is responsible for this. They'll use that to go after, you know, every gun maker who manufactures a firearm on the AR platform, every semi-automatic rifle out there, and they'll try to get those products pulled from the shelves, right? Because that's the other aspect of this lawsuit or these lawsuits. They're trying to block the sale of Glock products going forward.
Well, these blue states are continuing to exploit the protections within the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act and trying to find what they feel are workarounds in that law. And look, where does this end? All trains end at the same station when it comes to the Second Amendment. That's the U.S. Supreme Court. And as we've had this conversation many times and will continue to until the court takes core items up in their docket, whether that's hardware for firearms or magazines or the harassment of the firearms industry like we're seeing here, we need the United States Supreme Court to treat the Second Amendment like every other right, not a second-class right, make clear opinions on this issue that protect law-abiding Americans, protect this lawful commerce, and protect this core civil rights. So we look to SCOTUS, and there are some cases in the pipeline related to this very specific issue. Mm-hmm. But we shouldn't even have to spend millions of dollars to bring these cases through the court system. While yet states are weaponizing taxpayer funds to go after this right with really no repercussions against them. I mean, that's kind of the extremely frustrating part as a law-abiding taxpayer, free American, that a state can weaponize an office like that against Second Amendment supporters, gun owners, and really face no repercussions. I mean, that's something that ideally would change.
I was going to say, I mean, is there any recourse for these FFLs? Can they fight these subpoenas? You know, can they make the argument that, look, the AG doesn't need my sales records because she can go to the state police and get this information? Is that something that they can do? Is that something that if it can be done, that the NRA would be willing to assist with?
Well, look, I think that's part of the goal in the AG's office. I think they want them to fight these subpoenas because it will cost these gun shops resources. They're going to have to hire legal counsel. They're going to have to fight it. And as we know, you know, lawsuits are expensive. Lawyers are expensive. So look, NRA has the Civil Rights Defense Fund. If there's a dealer that has an issue like this, their attorney can apply to the Civil Rights Defense Fund for support. This is exactly what this entity exists for. I've been talking with Joe Greenlee on our legal team. I'm sure he's been talking with NSSF because they're on the industry side. You know, we kind of equate it to NSSF's behind the counter. Our members are in front of the counter, but neither one of us exists without lawful commerce crossing the counter. So that's where we both align on something like this. So NRA's legal team is looking into this, seeing where we can help. Any dealers that do need help, we do encourage them to have their attorney reach out to the Civil Rights Defense Fund. It has to be an attorney. It's structured that way for a reason. But that entity's standing ready to help and issues grants like this all the time. Quite a few that actually never really get talked about.
Yeah. We should actually explore what the Civil Rights Defense Fund is doing. Back in the NRA News days, we used to have Stephen Tomasebi on the program on a fairly regular basis talking about the cases that the Civil Rights Defense Fund was involved with. And you're right, mm-hmm. they're doing great work and not necessarily getting a lot of attention for it. But I'm glad to know that that is a resource that's available to gun shops and FFLs in the Garden State. And John, keep up the great work. I know we'll be talking to you again soon because there, again, is no shortage of attacks on our Second Amendment rights. And maybe next time we might even have like a good news story, a victory to talk about somewhere, right?
I sure hope so. And look, we're waiting every day for the Third Circuit to issue their decision in the hardware case there. We have the NRA's case. We had Cheeseman with some others combined together. So we're waiting on that. Obviously, I think everyone is cautiously optimistic there with the Third Circuit taking that en banc on their own. Mm-hmm. That could really lead to hopefully good things. And as a refugee from New Jersey, I feel the pain of the Garden State every day. So appreciate you having me on so we can talk about it.
Absolutely. John, thanks so much for your time. Look forward to doing this again very soon.
Thanks, Cam.
And thanks to John for joining us on the program and looking forward to talking to him again soon. Let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. Again, I don't know if this is a true recidivist report, but it is a head-scratcher of a sentencing decision from Utah. A wake-up call. Utah man who shot victim during a robbery avoids prison. He's not the only one. In fact, his two accomplices avoided prison as well, thanks to a series of sweetheart plea deals involving a attempted robbery last April. This was supposed to be a drug deal. Basically, a guy had ordered a marijuana vape cart. The seller shows up in a car, and these three individuals, including a 19-year-old Mauricio Hernandez, all pull their guns, approach the car, start shooting. Hernandez is the one who actually hit the driver in the arm, shot him in the elbow, apparently. And again, all three avoiding prison or any really any additional jail time. Mauricio Hernandez ended up pleading guilty to aggravated assault, which is a third-degree felony. He was sentenced to a term of 0 to 5 years in prison, but the judge in this case suspended all that prison time, ordered him to serve 36 months of probation and 300 days in jail, but gave him credit for the more than 300 days that he had already spent behind bars. So he's done. His accomplice, 19-year-old Jordan Leitner, earlier pleaded guilty to aggravated assault resulting in a serious injury, was sentenced to 1 to 15 years in prison, but that was suspended in favor of 288 days in jail, which, again, time served. Another individual sentenced back in February to 1 to 15 years in prison for aggravated assault resulting in serious injury. That sentence also suspended. He was ordered to serve 300 days in jail. He got credit for 185 days that he had spent behind bars. So he may have actually had to spend a few more days in jail. But that was it. The plea deal offered to all three men dismissed charges for aggravated robbery, two counts of felony discharge of a firearm, as well as aggravated assault. In lieu of a second chance for all three of them. Now, I understand these are young adults. They are, however, adults. And they're... crime was a violent one. A guy got shot. That, to me, should not result in nothing more than probation and time served. But that, apparently, is the going rate for a robbery in Utah these days. Today's Armed Citizen story, actually from today, from earlier this morning, Clarksville, Tennessee. Alleged burglar shot in Clarksville, airlifted to a Nashville hospital for treatment. I don't have a ton of information, again, because this happened just about 1:40 Monday morning. Officers responded to reports of a shooting at an apartment complex. They showed up, found a man shot multiple times in serious condition. He was life-flighted to Nashville. A female resident at the village told officers that the man had broken into her apartment, so she confronted him and shot him. The man sustained wounds to his back and his hand. A woman cooperating with detectives at this point. Don't know if there was any prior relationship between the two, but hopefully we'll be able to get more details as information comes out. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, when able to do the right thing. a Floridian who handed over a fanny pack he found at Wawa that was stuffed with $30,000 in cash. Boy, oh boy, that is a good Samaritan. Luis Salazar says he unzipped the pack to look for identification after he found it hanging in a Wawa restroom. And then he called authorities, but he couldn't track down the owner himself. He didn't realize that the bag had that much cash. But when he saw the owner get that bag back and break down in relief, he said, you know, it's not my money to take. He said, I wasn't raised that way. So Luis Salazar, who, again, was just trying to use the bathroom when he stumbled upon this fanny pack, returning that money. And, I'd like to think I'd do the same thing. $30,000, that would come in handy. Cash? That'd really come in handy. But Luis Salazar in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, even when nobody was watching. And we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company. I want to thank you as well for being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. We've covered more of the latest segment news and information from all across the nation, but be sure to check out BearingArms.com. In the meantime, we're keeping you covered there as well. If you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just use the promo code FIGHT when you go to BearingArms.com/subscribe, and you can get 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, you'll get that savings. And no matter what tier of support you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. And I want to thank you for that very much. I will be on News Nation in the 10 p.m. Eastern hour tonight talking with my friend Katie Pavlich about the new assault firearm ban in Virginia. Hopefully you can tune in for that. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.